Hello, everyone. You are listening to Advanced Studio Classroom, and my name is Brandon. It's July 9th, and we are so glad that you have joined us today. And I have two panelists in the studio with me today. First, welcome, Joe. How are you doing today, Joe?
Doing well. It's very good to be here and talking about just such an inspirational life.
That's right. This is an inspiring story. We have lots to talk about today and tomorrow and the following day. This is a 3-day inspiration article, and also here to help us discuss this is Zach. Welcome, Zach.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
Yes, and so we are on page 18. The title of this article, Joe, is Lost Boy of Sedan, and readers or listeners, you might be more familiar with the Lost Boys of Sudan. That is kind of the name for all of the boys who were involved here, and we'll learn more about that later. But it was also a movie made about this. In 2003, there was a documentary that came out about the Lost Boys of Sudan, so many of you may be familiar with that. What do we learn in our deck, Joe?
So in our deck, we see that this particular lost boy had walked 1,000 miles on bloody feet. And now, not only has he had that experience, but he is also helping other refugees.
Yeah. Now, Zach, imagining this is hard, right? Most of us, thank God, we can't relate to this. But just the deck already is inspiring us, isn't it?
It's very an attention-grabbing kind of description that we have here. It certainly got my attention, and I think it kind of stands by why this is our inspiration feature, that this is kind of this person had this life experience, and he's telling a story.
Yeah, he is telling a story, but I like here, Joe, that he's also helping others. He's gone through something difficult, and isn't that the beauty of the challenges that we have in life, is that we can learn from those challenges, and then we can then help others who are going through similar challenges.
Right, and I think it's especially important that he's this member of a refugee community. So he's someone within that community who's also helping. It's sometimes difficult because often we'll have outsiders come into a place and help refugees.
Right.
But to have sort of one of your own who's gone to that country, who's had a bit of that difficult experience getting into a new environment, who can help guide you, I think it's very important.
Yeah, he's been in their shoes. Mm. He's walked that path. He knows what they're going through, and so it's much more personal.
Very relatable.
Yes, right? He can relate to their stories. So he walked 1,000 miles on bloody feet. We'll find out more about that in our article, and he is now helping others. Well, let's take a look, or listen rather, to our first reading for today. We will just read the entirety of page 18.
Lost Boy of Sudan. He walked 1,000 miles on bloody feet. Now this lost boy of Sudan helps other refugees. Sometimes when refugees are at their lowest emotional point in his office, in Hanford, California, Jacob Awora Ewan, a psychiatric physician assistant, will tell the patients his own story of being a lost boy, walking thousands of miles to escape a bloody civil war. Being somebody of that background myself, who went through a war-torn country from refugee camp to refugee camp with no food, no shoes, I feel like I can relate to them. He was about 8 years old when civil war in Sudan drove him and an estimated 20,000 other boys to walk 1,000 miles from their villages to safety. Ewan, now a 39-year-old medical professional, recalls the terror-filled barefoot trek. 4 or 5 times we were caught in crossfire where some of us were killed. He and the others who survived the unforgiving journey came to be called the Lost Boys of Sudan for their likeness to the orphan boys in Peter Pan. In 2001, the United States accepted 4,000 of those refugees who came to begin new lives in a country at peace. Ewan was one of them.
Okay, so we start off in the state of California, actually. We're going to be kind of all over the place in this article because we're following Jacob Ewan's story, and we will We have a map there on page 18, but right now we start off in the state of California. And what is he actually doing there, Zach?
So we're introduced to Jacob here in an office as Jacob works as a psychiatric physician assistant. Psychiatric just refers to kind of like mental illness and dealing with kind of like psychology, mm-hmm. so to speak. And he's working as this assistant, and he's kind of sharing his own life story with patients that come to this office.
Yeah, so he's helping to treat patients. And so he's gone from Africa, and now he's in America, and this is the work that he's doing.
Right. And something interesting here is, you know, people are coming in to his office, you know, so when refugees are there and really getting to that emotional low point when they're maybe having a breakdown moment in his office, he's able to, you know, take his story and share that with others and say, you know, hey, I've been there too.
Right. And, you know, by the way, many of you probably already know this, but a refugee, of course, is a person who has escaped from their own country for political, religious, or other reasons. And so America takes in certain number of refugees, as do other countries. And so he is there helping other refugees who are at this low point in life. He's been in their shoes, and he is there to help. And so we continue on, and he tells his patients his own story of being a lost boy. And I think that's helpful to hear, because they've gone through that and they can relate to his story, I'm sure.
And even in the beginning of this article here, you're kind of, I know I feel quite enticed to know, you know, how did Jacob find himself in this kind of a situation? He's introduced as this refugee with kind of a pretty wild story, mm-hmm. and now has made it all the way from Africa into America, now working in this doctor's office.
Yeah, it does make you want to learn more. It kind of draws you in to his story. And I just want to stop for a moment and say we all have stories to share, and they're very different from this probably. But sometimes we think, oh, no one can learn from my story, but you never know what your story will do. So we need to share, you know, the struggles. We need to be authentic. We need to be vulnerable. And I think a lot of people will appreciate that and learn from that. Well, it says here that he walked thousands of miles to escape a bloody civil war. And then he goes on to tell us more. What does he say, Joe?
Well, he said that that experience, you know, being somebody of that background himself, is something that people can relate to, that they can kind of understand and appreciate, and they can kind of connect based on just his background.
Yeah, and when we use that word background, it's talking about kind of where you grew up and what you went through. And some people, of course, have similar backgrounds. In this case, they do, and so they can relate to each other. And then we have this phrase, or this word here, hyphenated word, war-torn country. What is meant by that, Zach?
Well, here this term just describes kind of the state of affairs happening in this particular country at the time. And so we are informed that there's a war going on. Mm. And torn just indicates that it's serious, right? Mm. It kind of means to be divided, or, you know, divided against itself.
Kind of tearing apart the country. The war is literally tearing the country up.
Right.
And so it goes on and talks about, you know, as he went from refugee camp to refugee camp with no food and no shoes. And, you know, we talked about on the deck, he walked 1,000 miles on bloody feet. All he didn't have shoes. And so if you walk 1,000 miles, it's easy for that to happen.
Right. And it also gives you a sense of just how desperate that situation is. You know, sometimes, especially in the United States, refugees, by the time they get there, are usually settled in one place. But mm-hmm. when they're in Kenya, you get the sense that refugees are constantly moving around from place to place without any sense of security, without any sense of being able to call a certain place home for any real length of time.
Well, and just to get to safety, it may take a while. Right.
Right.
And then maybe that area is not safe anymore. They have to go to another camp. And so they have to walk, and it takes a lot of time.
And I think what really starts to put this particular story into perspective for me is that next line at line 5. He was about 8 years old when civil war in Sudan drove him to start this journey. And so, yeah, 8 years old. Wow. You know, I think I'm processing this as a 30-year-old, right? With, you know, my life experiences. But my gosh, you know, you start thinking about, someone who's, you know, only 8 years old, where they have to face these kind of life events.
It's incredibly young.
And I like the way you phrased that, by the way, put something into perspective, just giving you that idea of what it must have been like, the context for it. I think that's a really helpful phrase to say, like, you know, you read a book or you meet someone and it helps put a situation into perspective.
Yeah, and it's nice to know his perspective and all the things he went through, you know, make up who he is. And he's learned so much from that, I'm sure. And now he's able to help others who have gone through something similar, which is beautiful to use those things that you've gone through to help others. So he was about 8 years old when civil war in Sudan drove him and an estimated 20,000 other boys to walk those 1,000 miles. Now, a civil war is a war that's going on within the same country, and the country, of course, is divided. They're fighting against each other, which is pretty tragic in and of itself.
Right. And it's an interesting kind of phrase, because we think of civil, normally we think of civil as someone just being polite to one another, but here it really just means factions within a country warring against each other.
Yes, that is true, and the civil war is a very tragic event, of course, and so that's what has been going on in Sudan, basically on and off. Well, Yuen is now a 39-year-old medical professional. We've already learned that he is a psychiatric physician assistant. And I think Zach mentioned this earlier. That's amazing that as an 8-year-old boy, he struggled to survive, like literally survive. And now he is able to, you know, join this profession. You know, he is a psychiatric physician assistant, and that is encouraging and inspiring in and of itself.
Right. I think to be able to go from just I'm a refugee and I'm just trying to survive to I've moved to the United States to I have strong enough English that I can have the ability to understand very complicated concepts to I now have a degree and a license to practice.
And I wonder, because of all of the difficulties he went through, he learned a lot about perseverance, right? And so I think, you know, a lot of us, we grow up and we don't, you know, thank God have to go through this, but as a result of him going through this, I'm sure that's helped him to get to where he is today with regards to, you know, it's probably not easy for him to give up, right?
Certainly not. And we see this kind of a description here. It says, a terror-filled barefoot trek. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I think that kind of puts words and puts language to that perseverance and what it would take to kind of, I guess, to kind of get to that point and what he had to go through. Another hyphenated word, terror-filled. So you get this visual or you get this sense of this was a real experience that was very terrifying.
Yes, and of course he didn't have any shoes, and we learned about that earlier. He says here 4 or 5 times we were caught in crossfire where some of us were killed. So we just had that hyphenated word, terror-filled, and this describes that further. What is crossfire?
So crossfire here, caught in crossfire, it's a very dangerous situation where, you know, you have bullets flying from all sorts of different directions as other people are attempting to shoot at each other, and you're sort of caught in the middle of all of that.
So they're not necessarily shooting at them necessarily, but there are these two sides shooting and they're kind of just caught in the middle.
Right.
Yeah. And imagine being a kid and you see this. You see your friends dying beside you.
And so they were caught in this crossfire together as they are kind of making this barefoot trek. And so, again, just that word trek refers to journey, trying to travel from one refugee camp to another.
That's right. So he and the others who survived the unforgiving journey came to be called the Lost Boys of Sudan. And that's where our title comes in. We're talking about one of these boys. So the title is Lost Boy of Sudan. And as I mentioned earlier, they did a movie, a documentary about this back in 2003. It's a feature-length documentary. You can check that out if you're interested in learning more about these lost boys. And so that's what the title they gave them. Why? Because for their likeness to the orphaned boys in Peter Pan.
Right. So in the story of Peter Pan has, of course, the Lost Boys. And so they're a group of orphans that go on adventures with Peter Pan. And so there you get sort of the idea that, you know, they're just constantly moving around, and so they're sort of lost. They don't really have a place that they call home.
And there were many of these boys who were lost. Actually, back in 1987, the Civil War drove an estimated 20,000 young boys from their families in southern Sudan. And then we learn here in 2001, the United States actually accepted 4,000 of these refugees. And so they're starting a new life in America. And I believe there have been other movies that have been made about the Lost Boys. And it's inspiring to see that, you know, they go from another culture. I mean, everything just changes drastically, doesn't it?
Certainly would, you know, going from one country to another. And I think here the statistic is interesting, and I think they mention the help of the United States mainly because this is where Jacob had found himself. He was one of those that, of the 4,000 that was accepted into the United States. So that's not to say that other countries aren't lending a hand or helping out, but he falls into that statistic that found himself in a new situation, a brand new situation, trying to make a life for himself in the U.S.
It's really interesting. I was actually, in reading this and starting to prepare and really understand what's going on, with this idea of the United States accepting these refugees. So it's fascinating what the United States, they would have like a name list. And every week they would have planes come in and take people out. What they would do is before the planes would come, they would actually staple the name list onto this bulletin board. And so people would rush to the bulletin board to see if they were the ones that were going to be on that plane out. And so just to imagine, you know, you're in a refugee camp. You're looking for hope. And so, you know, you get some people who week in and week out are going to this bulletin board just to see if they're going to be that person.
I think I saw that. I cannot remember the name of the movie, but it was about the Lost Boys, I believe. And they, I think they showed a scene like that because, you know, these people are coming up. They're hoping that they can, you know, get away to another country where they can experience safety. And then maybe their name is not on the list and have to wait longer. And so that, again, is another struggle that they have to go through. But at least they're closer to that point, you know.
Wow, that's quite the scene. I'm trying to kind of imagine these families, you know, frantically searching, looking for their name. Wow.
It's intense. And so Jacob was one of the 4,000. And as we already know, he's in the state of California working there. Well, we have more to learn, so let's jump over to page 19 and we'll have our next reading for today.
And fighting in South Sudan is never far from his mind. South Sudan continues to uproot people. Kakuma, the Kenyan refugee camp that a UN left in 2001, is full once again of children and families. People are still suffering, still dying, a UN says.
So, South Sudan is never far from Jacob's mind. Of course, this is his home, and he's concerned about the people there. South Sudan continues to uproot people. What does it mean for something to be uprooted, Zach?
Well, here it just refers to kind of uprooting these people from their home and actually taking them out probably abruptly. And because of this war, they were forced to leave.
Right. They're just removing them. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, we see a map there actually, and we have Sudan there and South Sudan. Now, you may be wondering why there are two different countries, but actually in July of 2011, these two countries split after the people of the South voted for independence, and so that's why we have Sudan and South Sudan.
It's quite incredible reading about sort of the process of South Sudan coming into being, and I think it's still one of the newest countries in the world. One of the newest countries to gain.
Sure, yeah, because 2011.
Right.
Not that
and
long ago.
When they did that vote, it was, they had 99% vote for separation and only 1% vote for unity.
That's overwhelming.
That's an incredible sort of resounding, we want our own country.
Right. Well, next we learn about, Kakuma, the Kenyan refugee camp that Jacob left in 2001. It's full, once again, of children and families. And so this is a sad situation. You know, there are these wars, and you hope that their peace will come and things will change. Sometimes peace comes for a while, but it doesn't remain. And so it's an ongoing thing, really. There may be peace for a while, but then war disrupts the country again.
Certainly. And just by looking again at our map on the top of page 18, you can see where that Kakuma refugee camp is located, and you kind of get a sense, okay, this is why we're traveling to that area. It's mm-hmm. just far enough away from maybe the war, yeah. and it's kind of the first place you come to.
Yeah. So he says here, people are still suffering, still dying. After all these years, Joe, it hasn't changed much.
Right. The main thing that's changed is sort of the reasons behind the conflict. And so if you look back at the initial war where you start to have Northern Sudan and Southern Sudan fighting each other, it's mostly along religious lines with the Muslim majority north and the Christian majority south.
Hmm.
And then once you get Southern Sudan coming to as its own independent country, then it becomes ethnic.
Hmm.
Sort of all these ethnic groups that were willing to combine together to fight the initial war sort of break apart. So you have sort of the Dinka majority and different ethnic groups fighting against each other.
Wow, Joe, you did your homework. Thanks for doing that research and sharing that background information. It's really good to know what is going on in this region of the world and what has been going on over the past several years. Well, we've started off this article learning about Jacob and where he is now in California and a bit about his history. We're going to continue as we learn more about the journey that he went through. We talked about these 1,000 miles that he had to travel. So let's begin that journey in our next reading.
The journey begins. A Ewan was herding cattle outside his village when the warning came. It was not safe to stay. Young boys in southern Sudan often live in cattle camps away from their families, and a Ewan was at such a camp when war erupted. There was no time, and it was too dangerous to go home to his mother. He followed older men who led the young herders out of the camp. Barefoot, barely clothed, a Ewan walked until his feet bled, and walked some more. There were nights without sleep and days filled with fear when wild animals chased him. Boys died.
All right, we start the journey. We learn that Jacob was actually herding cattle outside his village. What does that mean to herd cattle, Joe?
Well, herding cattle, especially in traditional societies, you have your cattle out grazing and eating grass, and you just make sure that they're able to go safely from place to place. You can herd the cattle. You can kind of direct them and guide them to different spots.
Now, Joe, you grew up with animals. Did you ever have to herd a group of animals?
I had mostly horses, and we don't really have to worry about herding them, but sometimes, you know, we have to like maybe corral them to get like vaccinations or mm-hmm. some treatment. So you often find yourself trying to push them around a little bit.
Horses are a bit different, right? Well, that's what he was doing. And then we learned that it wasn't safe to stay there. So what did they have to do?
Yeah, it says that this warning came and we're not really sure quite what that means, but I think the point is delivered. It says it was not safe to stay there. So here we're given quite the descriptive scene of what's happening to young Jacob. So they were living at these cattle camps. Cattle camps are kind of where the cows are managed and dealt with, and it seems like this is the job opportunities for a lot of these boys here in southern Sudan.
So Jacob was there, and what happened? The war actually erupted.
Right. That word erupted just means to kind of suddenly start, and it started. And there was no time. It was too dangerous to even go home and say goodbye to his mother. And so you get this, kind of a descriptive scene where, you know, he wasn't even able to say his goodbyes properly. It's just, we have to go.
Yeah, the urgency here is really amazing that everything just happens so quickly. And I guess that can happen with war. And so they just had to flee that area.
Right. And something to keep in mind is, you know, Southern Sudan, 2001, there isn't a lot of information available. You don't have sort of a lot of easy access to newspapers or television. Like now you can see things right away in live action, what's happening. Mm-hmm. But then you just have no sort of heads up that something's going to go on.
And so they followed these older men who led the young herders out of the camp. And then they were barefoot. They didn't have many clothes. And then they walked until their feet bled. And they didn't stop at that point, did they?
No. It says, then they walked some more. And you get another descriptive sentence here of just these, kind of the journey and just where they started at. And it's like, you know, they're not getting sleep. They're being chased. There's the fears, I'm sure, is just rising. Yeah. They're out in the wild. And, you know, I think Joe brought up a really good point, and that is, you know, if you find yourself kind of in a dangerous situation, what is your first instinct? You know, mine is certainly to kind of check for more information, to Google search, to, you know, what is the context and what's happening? But here they don't really have these amenities. It's just, we have to go. Mm. No shoes. Whatever we'll face is what we'll face, and we're going to just try our best along the way. And, yeah, that's, wow.
They were even chased by wild animals. I mean, it just doesn't end. There's so much going on that they had to endure in it. We end today with on a really sad note. It says boys died. And so many of the boys died, actually. Of course, Jacob is one of the ones who survived. So you're just going through so much. I can't imagine going through this especially at this age.
Right. To be so young and to not know what's happening, to not know where you're going to find food, where you're going to sleep, and have to experience such a difficult thing, such hardship at a young age.
Yeah. Well, we have more to talk about tomorrow and also the next day. This story has a lot to it, so we hope you will join us tomorrow for day two of our inspiration article. Until then, this is Brandon.
And Zach.
And Joe.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.